Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We have a wonderful selection of panel guests with us. a wide assortment.
Yeah.
And we welcome you into the conversation as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Ray Graff is in the house. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us.
Good morning.
And we're always thrilled to have Mike with us. And
here she is.
And lo and behold, making an entrance.
I have been here.
No, I know you were here.
Well, we got to close that door.
And then we lost you.
Yeah.
Yes, there you are. Our wonderful University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, Rosemary Armeo, is... back from whatever.
Back from the Amazon. I haven't seen a newspaper, heard a radio station in months, and I should be a real great contributor today.
Well, especially since we turned your microphone on, I think you'll be even better.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's going to be great.
I see you guys have really gotten your act together.
Yeah, so we're much better. Good stuff. So you were gone. You were in wherever you were.
Brazil,
and doing whatever mission they sent you on. I don't know what.
I really don't work for the CIA.
I'm still not.
It's not true.
I'm still not convinced.
Can you tell us what Angela ordered from the pizza shop?
She had pepperoni last night. Das pepperoni.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let's begin with a wide range of topics, as I mentioned. And there's a lot to I'll give you guys a choice this morning of what you want to start off with, because we can
abortion.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we do that one?
Yeah,
I get
sure.
to pick it, the woman's issue.
Absolutely. Let's go. In fact, I had that at the top of the list, so that's
good.
A great place to start. This, of course, has to do with the law in Texas. A federal judge in Texas on Monday blocked an important part of the state's restrictive new abortion law, which would have required doctors performing the procedure to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. The decision, one day before the provision was to take effect, which would be today, prevented a major disruption of abortion clinics in Texas. It was a victory for abortion rights groups and clinics that had said the measure served no medical purpose and could force as many as one-third of the state's 36 abortion clinics to close.
Okay, what do we think of this?
What do we think of this? You chose it.
I chose it, so I go first.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think government has any call in abortion at all. That's my bottom line.
Even in Texas?
I mean, even in Texas, where church and state are so close. I don't know. I think abortion is murder, but I would not want to legislate that because other people don't, and I don't have the right. And yet here we're now in a second major struggle legally and judicially over abortion. This is clearly going to end up in the Supreme Court, I think. And it follows a whole series of actions in state legislatures over the last few years to not get rid of Roe v. Wade, but to go around it by putting so many restrictions on abortion that it might as well be outlawed. And Texas came the closest to it with this law. And judges now are stopping it. And it's extremely interesting because I'm not quite sure where it comes from. Where in the Constitution do they get the background saying it's unconstitutional to require, for example, doctors to have backing in a local hospital?
Well, these are just a tactic to, you know,
exactly.
to make abortions illegal in Texas. I mean, Governor Rick Perry has said that he wants to make abortion a thing of the past,
right.
And that's what he said when he signed this law. And I guess it really comes down to whether the courts see that this is just that it's a strategy to make it more difficult to find abortion services, and then therefore there's no medical basis for requiring a doctor to belong to the staff of a local hospital. And it's funny because I think this
court's ruling,
yeah,
Mike,
yeah.
did not strike down the whole law.
No, it didn't.
It picked
right.
and chose
yeah.
among the mm-hmm. different aspects of it. And that's what I found really interesting. I think this is – you have to look at that to look at the strategy that both sides are going to end
well,
up taking
also,
as this
and that,
goes
that,
forward.
And the thing that was upheld, the part of the law that was upheld to me was the medical part.
Right.
Which to me is even more concerning of a court telling – doctors what they should and shouldn't be doing. From my understanding of it, the judge of U.S. District Court of the U.S. District Court in Austin declared that the act's admitting privileges provision is without a rational basis and places a substantial obstacle in the path of women seeking an abortion of a non-viable fetus. The court, the court upheld this second measure requiring doctors to use a particular drug protocol in non-surgical medication-induced abortions.
It seems that, like, a court making such a specific decision like that is unusual in light of their first part of the ruling.
Right. Well, especially since doctors have said that that protocol is outdated and too restrictive.
That's what I said. I find this a really interesting ruling and one that needs to be studied by strategists on both sides, trying to advance abortion and those trying to end it. I don't get it. I've read the story a couple of times. They also said it was okay to restrict abortion to the first 20 weeks, even though medically it goes to 24 weeks, which gives you another whole month. They said that was fine with them.
And it looks like it's heading ultimately back to the Supreme Court
to clarify this.
You knew that was coming, right? Mm. I mean, we assumed that from the very beginning when Governor Perry signed this legislation that would end up in the Supreme Court. Didn't we? Yeah, we did,
I think. Well, this is a big one.
Oh, me?
No, I didn't know if you were. I thought you were trying to jump in.
No, I'm just taking it all in. Although I did have a question for Rosemary, who at the outset had said, personally against it, but you want government to stay out of it.
I don't want lawmakers figuring out what I or anybody else should do. So personally, that's what I think, and that's fine, but I support the right to choose.
Right. Now, so my question then would be, would you take it to the next step and say government, A, has no business making that call, and B, has no business funding those, providing funding for them?
No, because if you say no, there's no funding for it, then you're making a call on it. You're saying it's
even
you're making a law.
Even for private hospitals that have their own funding?
Then saying that only people with money can make that choice.
Yeah. And you've made it more restrictive.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I understand what you're saying.
I'm just asking.
Yes.
I also support actually effective, thought-out sex education and contraceptives available to everyone else, because that all rejects the idea or helps the idea that you'll have fewer abortions. We restrict all of those things, too. So it's just not equal. It's just not a level playing field the whole way here.
Rosemary alluded to this, but I just want to clarify. The lawsuit did not challenge two other central provisions of the Texas law,
right,
a requirement that all abortion clinics meet the costly standards of ambulatory surgery centers, which does not take effect until September of next year, I believe.
Right.
And a ban on nearly all abortions starting at 20 weeks after conception, which will take effect on Tuesday. So, when you see the numbers, you think, okay, well, it's 20 versus 24, but that's a month.
It is a month, and many women don't even realize, especially in a first pregnancy, that you are pregnant for that until you get to a certain point. It sounds like much more than it really is, and there are also medical reasons to do that. This law is just, it just stops abortions, and it also stops a lot of medically needed procedures for women. It makes medical decisions. So
we talk about this every election cycle. We talk about this presidential election cycle, about the and this case is sort of, it seems to me, always the elephant in the room as to the Supreme Court decisions that a president will make and that the members of the court that they will name, and always that at some point they will have an abortion case that they will have to decide upon. Mm-hmm. And it just strikes me is that, this has been, 40 years now? This has been a court fight.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many, many years prior to that. And you just wonder, well, is this always going to be the way? Is this always going to be a legal fight?
Yeah, I mean, it has all the issues on it that are most important in politics, life and death.
Yeah, I mean, complicating it is extraordinarily reasonable people from both sides are, in every other way, and they cannot agree on this, and they feel so strongly about it. It's not a soft issue. It is a real emotional issue that people have very strong feelings about and how to deal with it. And I mean, it's passion, and I it just because even if it goes to the Supreme Court and they say all these techniques to, you know, make restrict the availability of abortion services, you know, even if that does happen, I don't think the issue will go away. Or if, you know, if states are allowed to restrict in the manner that some have already done it, and that's affirmed by the courts, you know, it's still not going to solve it in those states. I mean, it's going to be, I think it's a major cultural issue. It's based in people's own ethics and religion and faith. And
there is a legitimate government interest in this. I, for example, I thought what you were going to challenge me on, Ray, was this. If I think abortion is murder, then why aren't you asking me, don't I think murder should be punished? If it were an human, then yes, it would be.
I wasn't even challenging you. I was just asking what your position was as far as government staying out, whether that includes also funding.
Yeah, I would love to have government completely removed, government in the form of legislators and the judiciary. But that's not going to happen for all the reasons Mike just went through.
And you then come into, and we don't quite have this down, although it's you know, I'm sure it happens in some places, where if you have states that are more restrictive than others, and people are going to go across state lines and they're going to travel, and it just becomes it's a odd. A lot like gay marriage, it is currently, where you go, okay, you can't do it here, but you can do it there.
Although I think that one is probably, I mean, it will still be emotional, and there'll probably be controversies about it for long after we're gone. But, you know, it seems like the momentum is there, that people have kind of accepted it.
Yeah. You know? No, absolutely. I'm talking about the actual moving but from, the, you know, right now, you know, state to state, until the court takes...
It feels to me like we're going back into the 60s when abortion was illegal in most places, and women still had abortions. They went to illicit clinics, meeting ambulatory care, you know, or they would use home remedies that were extremely dangerous. They went into states, the few states that did allow
it, or went to foreign
countries. Or foreign countries, exactly. And we're moving back to that same sort of situation. Abortions will happen.
And I agree with you. I think that the emphasis should be on prevention and education.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which we've never been good at.
Nope.
No matter what we're talking about, abortion or drugs.
Then
or
we seem
anything,
to get into whole other issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you teach kids sex education, you're teaching them to have sex. When will we ever get past that?
Or I think kids figure it out on their own, frankly.
It seems to me the human race has sort of done that.
It works out pretty well for everyone.
By the way, Rosemary, just thinking about what you said about having not seen a paper in a long time, but the government's open again.
Oh, I was so happy. Yeah. I was the first thing I got off the plane and said, do we have a government?
Sure.
And I thought it was a good sign we landed.
We're open
FAA
again.
FAA must
there was
still be
TSA
working.
People at the airport who welcomed you back.
Yes.
We'll continue our conversation on the panel in just a moment. We welcome your phone. We welcome your
don't
your
call.
Email.
We don't welcome your phone calls. They're not welcome.
We have no one manning the phones at the moment.
No, don't do it.
It's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC goes on Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, producing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts, and collections. Sponsor of Antiques Roadshow, MarkLawson.com. And Proctors, presenting World Blues featuring the Taj Mahal Trio, November 2nd, Proctors.org.
Hilarity in the breaks from Rosemary.
Welcome back. To our roundtable battle. We've just decided in the break we want to switch topics, and we're going to talk about, and this one will probably take for a couple of minutes, at least up to the news break and then beyond, roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to join us. So White House says more intelligence constraints needed. The White House has acknowledged the need for additional constraints, their word, on U.S. intelligence gathering amid claims of eavesdropping on allies. Spokesman Jay Carney said an ongoing White House intelligence policy review would account for privacy concerns. Spain is the latest of several countries reported to have been the target of U.S. collection of phone data. A top Democrat in the Senate has said its intelligence panel will undertake a major review of U.S. spying programs. And it seems as though since this whole story broke, well, the original NSA story and then most recently beginning with Angela Merkel.
Angela.
I apologize. Yeah. Angela. Thank you. Yeah. Angela Merkel in Germany, that we have ticked off just about everybody.
Can you imagine if you were a country that the United States wasn't watching, what an insult that would now be?
Yes.
Togo was upset.
Yeah. We were doing stuff. Hey.
Don't you care?
No, again, I'm impressed by my friends from overseas who say, of course they were spying. Does anyone not think this was going on? And I'm having trouble explaining to them that, yes, we are surprised and shocked that this is going on, that the government is listening in on our conversations, citizens, and on the conversations of our allies. We are supposed to be
different
as
the United
States.
But the allies seem to be surprised.
Yes. Well, of course.
Do you think they're really surprised?
That's the question.
Or is this diplomatic talk? Like, you know, we know it goes on, but to actually have it, you know, have it, and it's almost like, you know, that scene from Casablanca. I'm shocked, you know,
when you
find out that gambling is going on. You know, it's a fact of life that there's been this kind of intelligence, you know, and perhaps they didn't think it was at this level, you know, where they were tapping the cell phone of the Chancellor of Germany, you know, or whatever. I mean, it's just that's a pretty heavy level. But, you know, it's kind of, I think, been out there, don't you think?
I don't know. That's more of this good old boy stuff that we, those who are members of the club, know that it goes on and we accept it, even though we put out something different for public consumption. And I'm sorry I'm too idealistic, but America should be different than that. Other countries do that. Russia does that. We should not be. We always acted like we had different morals and we're better than everybody else. And it turns out we're not. And that is extremely disappointing.
But I remember stories years ago, like when Boeing was building a 747 for the leadership of the Chinese government, and they went through it and debugged it, and it had tons of bugs in it and things like that. I mean, and every time, you know, you build an embassy in a foreign country, especially an unfriendly foreign country.
Moscow was famous.
Right.
For
you
that.
Know, they're putting bugs in everything and you're putting bugs in everything.
They're not allies. They were our enemies. Right. Completely different.
But still, it's fact of life.
I'm trying to find an article that I saw last night, and I was on a lot of different sites, so I'm having difficulty finding exactly this whole idea about what the president knew and when he knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is an interesting question, because I believe it was in the Washington Post, and I can't put my hands on it right now, but they were saying that is now becoming a very frequent argument that the president is making, I didn't, we certainly saw this with the Obamacare website, the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Apologize. That people will say, okay, the president will say, I didn't know this. I didn't know, and it's becoming.
What's the term? Is it plausible deniability?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, where you don't tell the president everything, because then he won't be lying when he says, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I had no
idea. Which is a small comfort, by the way, that the president didn't know this. If anything good comes out of this, it is that people are beginning to demand what the rules are, what the engagement actually is. We should know about this. It is not hurting national security if we know what the rules are about who we're going to listen to, what kind of material we're collecting.
Are you sure?
What we're going to use it
for. How do you know?
Because I think that saying, oh, it'll hurt, is the line that you get from people who want to keep secrecy and continue doing things the way they have been done.
We need some secrets, though, right?
Possibly, but I'd like a discussion on what those secrets are going to be and what they entail.
Then
and we
would,
don't, and we
be
don't know that.
Anymore.
I mean, if you even talk, okay, as journalists,
categories,
categories, yeah. As journalists, we're interested in documents, and those are also categorized as secret or classified in our government. And a whole series of rules over the last 10 years or since the Bush administration have developed about what's secret and what can be let out and what shouldn't be let out. And it's mostly all, when you look at it, very arbitrary. It has nothing to do with what really is important for our national security. This needs to be reviewed. All of it needs to be reviewed.
We're going to go over to an NPR news break. We'll be back in just a moment with more discussion. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. Inflation at the wholesale level actually fell in September, dipping by 0.1%, and an increase in the annual rate was the smallest in nearly 4 years. The news comes as the policymakers at the Federal Reserve gather for a two-day meeting on interest rates. Here's economist Scott Brown.
Inflation is not a problem. In fact, it's one of the Fed's concern. I mean, a couple of Fed officials are worried that inflation may be trending a little bit too low at this point. That was one factor behind the decision back in September to delay the tapering of asset purchases.
Also out this morning, a report on retail sales, which were down last month on a sharp drop in auto sales. But take out the numbers for cars, gas, and building supplies, and sales were up by a half percentage point. The Obama administration still reviewing its intelligence programs, but officials say it is considering putting an end to the practice of spying on the heads of states of U.S. allies. Dianne Feinstein, who heads the Senate Intelligence Committee, has made her views known. She says the U.S. should not be collecting calls or emails of friendly presidents and prime ministers. That is, not unless it's an emergency and with the approval of the president. Here's NPR's Larry Abramson.
Feinstein has opposed efforts to end bulk collection of Americans' phone records, but she says at least those programs were overseen by a special court. Surveillance of foreign leaders, Feinstein says, was not. Feinstein also indicated her committee was not satisfactorily informed about NSA collection efforts on the leaders of France, Spain, Mexico, and Germany, and that she is totally opposed to such activities. The Senate and House Intelligence Committees are planning hearings Tuesday into legislative proposals to limit collection of data about Americans' phone traffic. Larry Abramson, NPR News, Washington.
Hundreds of mostly conservative leaders will be on Capitol Hill today, urging House lawmakers to support an overhaul in the nation's immigration laws. NPR's Giles Snyder reports.
The effort brings together an unusual coalition. It's made up of business, religious, and law enforcement officials with one goal in mind, to persuade the House to bring an immigration overhaul to the floor. Back in June, the Senate passed a comprehensive bill, but the issue has stalled in the House. Many House Republicans prefer handling each issue separately, and a major sticking point is whether to offer a path to citizenship. Immigration is a key second-term agenda item for President Obama, who, in an interview with the new cable channel Fusion, repeated a call for Congress to complete work on an overhaul before the end of the year. Giles Snyder, NPR News, Washington.
The mother of shooting victim Trayvon Martin will be on Capitol Hill testifying before a Senate committee about Florida's so-called Stand Your Ground self-defense law. Sabrina Fulton maintains it helped the neighborhood watch volunteer who killed her son, in her words, get away with murder. On Wall Street, the Dow's up 39. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, proud sponsor of StoryCorps, preserving history and celebrating American lives.
Support for WAMC comes from Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, InterimHealthcare.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees, offering daily specials. 518-432-0358. And Lotus Fine Art and Design, Woodstock, reverse painted glass lighting, artisan crafted jewelry, and gifts for all occasions, paintings and custom framing, lotuswoodstock.com.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Jack writes to us and says, I'm surprised to not hear anyone pointing out that a lot of the outrage is to divert attention from the embarrassment that their own security people cannot detect and stop our spying. What did the panelists think of that point?
I think it's a good point, although I suspect the other intelligence people knew it. You know, there are things you know in the intelligence community that you don't say that you know, otherwise the game is up. I think they all kind of had an idea things were going on.
Yeah, I think there might be some collusion among countries to find out things and to share the information. However, the point made, I'm not sure who did it here earlier today, saying was there an awareness that it went up to the chancellor's own phone? Yes. That's something different.
Well, yeah, I think Mike made the point. And it is, you know, to that extent. And when you know the documentation is there, you know what has been done, you're like, oh, they were listening to that phone call. You know, I think that's different than just this overall idea of somebody could be listening in at any given random time.
Yeah, I mean, you would feel violated if you thought another country was listening in on Obama talking to his wife or at a going to a soccer game to see his kids play or whatever, you know, in his personal life. It just seems too deep to go. And apparently we were able to do that. And what it proves what they're able to do. I mean, maybe they're listening to celebrities. Maybe they're listening to, you know, for entertainment reasons. You don't know now what's going on. It's just a little bit frightening, the capacity of the NSA and what they can listen to.
Back to the abortion discussion that we started our program off with, Claire makes the point, it occurs to me, that if courts have the right to outlaw abortion, then they also have the right, presumably at a later date, to insist on abortion for reasons that they would decide.
Well, that's interesting.
That's frightening. And scary.
Well, very scary. You know, it could tie in with the fears among the hard right about the so-called the mythical death panels and everything else. So I see this emailer's point.
I mean, I
can't imagine it going very far.
No, but I mean, you know, everything to an extreme becomes ridiculous. You know, scary and ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to other issues. Mike, you've got some interesting stories on the pages of the Times Union.
Yeah, there's an interesting one today, and it ties in a little bit to the Affordable Care Act, and that is a study that was done in Schenectady, the city of Schenectady. Actually, it focused on some lower-income neighborhoods of Schenectady. They called it You Matter Schenectady. That's a U in front of the word matter. And they, various, you know, public health agencies and Ellis Healthcare, that's the umbrella for Ellis Hospital, went into the community and surveyed people about their health. And one of the stunning statistics they came back with is that 37% of adults smoke. And that's more than twice what it is on the average in upstate New York and in places all around the country. And therefore, you have issues of asthma, and there's also a higher percentage of obesity and diabetes. And what it really speaks to is this is a population that is not getting regular health care. And when they do go to get treated, it's usually to the emergency room. That's what most people cited. So they're not under the regular care of a physician. They're not really having anybody help guide their diet and their regime. And this is the cost of it. It has a devastating effect on people's health, and it's in families, and there's the effect of secondhand smoke. So what they want to do with this, now that they are armed with this data about these neighborhoods of Schenectady, is they want to apply for funding for federal programs for education and, to help people understand alternatives and to promote healthier lifestyles. And I suppose if the Affordable Care Act can take off, many of these people would be able to get more regular health care, and that might help solve this problem. But it's very interesting.
It is a fascinating story, and I assume, you know, it's obviously what we've been thinking about in communities all around the region, all around the country, of you know, what is the availability, what is happening out there.
Right. One of the arguments for the Affordable Care Act was that when people who are not getting health care get really sick, they go to the emergency room and they go into the hospital, and the cost is immense. If they had just been under regular physician's care, they wouldn't have gotten that sick, and the overall cost over time would be much lower, and they'd have a much better life, really, and the cost on the system would be lower.
The story made me wonder, why are these people smoking so much? There are certain populations we know use cigarettes way beyond what the regular population does. Mentally ill, poverty, people in prison. You know what I mean? Why is that?
People have other addictions and are trying to shake them.
Yeah, and they use this as a substitute. So I don't know. I'd like to see the tobacco companies paying the cost of some of this.
Let's go. We're going to... I'm so glad you're back. Let's go on to another topic. Let's talk about Penn State for a minute. I find this story to be really interesting. I mean, it's I don't know. Penn State has agreed to pay $59.7 million, so $60 million between all of us here, to 26 sexual abuse victims of the former assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky in exchange for an end to their claims against the university. Penn State announced this deal on Monday. Of the 26 settlements, 23 are fully signed. 3 are agreed to in principle, with final documentation expected in the next few weeks. Rodney Erickson is the president of the university. He called the settlement another step forward in the healing process for those hurt by Mr. Sandusky and another step forward for Penn State. He added, "We cannot undo what has been done, but we can and must do everything possible to learn from this and ensure it never happens again." In all, the university has been in talks with 32 individuals who were victims of Sandusky or claimed to be. In a statement, the university said some of the 6 remaining claims were without merit and others were in possible settlement discussions. The university retained the law firm to act as an independent third-party facilitator of the settlement negotiations between the university and the victims. I assume in most cases we knew that this was... that this was coming. It is it's a very large figure, and
they say though that it's not going to mean raising tuition, and it's going to be mostly covered by not completely, but mostly covered by insurance, which really surprised me. You know, I guess that's fortunate for Penn State, and then they had some kind of unusual explanation about how they're going to pay for the rest through interest payments or something. But the thing I was struck by is that they say these are consistent, according to one of the lawyers for one of the victims, these are consistent with the payouts that the Roman Catholic Church has made to victims of sexual abuse when it's been proven. So I guess there's now a model for how you compensate somebody when they've been violated
repeatedly raped as a child. Yes, yeah. How much is a child violation? It's there's one other money consideration in all of this, and that is that Penn State is protecting the franchise of its very lucrative football program.
Absolutely.
Already. I mean, this is great that they're doing it. They certainly owe it to those people. Don't get me wrong, but there's another motive here, and that's we see with the NCAA just last month has reduced the extremely harsh penalties against them. Program so that they're going to be issuing more scholarships, for example, to bring people back into the program. They're putting
that
money maker back on on the rails.
And I mean, certainly it makes sense that they have to rebuild and they have to go on after this horrible instance. But and yet, when you realize or when you think about what the university's role was in this, and that people within the university were aware, and higher ups in the university were aware, and they allowed it to go on to the extent, you wonder. Especially when much of this isn't going to be coming out of their own pocket, if it shouldn't be harsher or more, I don't want to say more damaging, but something that really let's face it, their credibility is wrecked at the moment. But again, and I understand that there has to be a rebuilding. But when you think of, you know, this wasn't coming out of left field and they said, oh, my God, we had no idea that this was happening.
Yeah, Erickson, the president of the university, said that or pledged formally that he would put into place a system that would prevent this kind of abuse in the future. We've heard very little about just what exactly is.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years now.
Yeah.
I mean,
you
should have it by now.
So, part of the settlement was, and the victims required that, in fact. They wanted some evidence that this would not be able to happen again, that there would be measures to monitor the behavior and the ways to report it and ways to check it out. And you know, I suppose they'll be a whole lot more vigilant given what's happened. But how do you remedy something when something like this has happened?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, they talk to a woman who is a spokeswoman for survivors of those abused by priests, SNAP, I think is the acronym for it. And she say, I mean, you cannot, no amount of money can restore the innocence that was taken from victims. And I think in the end, that's true. You can't fix it. This is a way to kind of get past it, but it's a blemish that in the history of this great institution, and it's not going to go away. People will, I think, for a generation will associate that team with this scandal.
Right, it's sort of like the Catholic Church. You can make compensation, but you are going to be affiliated or connected to pedophilia.
There are a lot of parallels. I mean, it certainly is a fine institution. It doesn't. It doesn't degrade what it shouldn't degrade. All the good work that Penn State has done, and yet it will. It will hang over them, and it's pretty sad.
It is, however, and I understand the comparison, of course, and the church is a much larger problem because it's a much larger institution and it's worldwide, and the abuse was worldwide, and it's huge. Here you have a institution, a place with one in one program, and it's far more contained.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so to me, it seems like there is a way to kind of get a better handle on that, especially considering that the dates are very clear as opposed to even in the Catholic Church where it goes back for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may well be. And the lesson for in this case is look at how the story was broken. It came out came about because of one young reporter, and prosecutors who finally acted, and victims who helped both of them. And maybe the next time there's a complaint, I don't know, maybe the city rather than the university will.
Right, but I mean it's the problem of major institutions. They get smug and anything plays, and they allow things to go on and you know, hide it from the public. I mean, that's a problem.
And they
over.
Also believe that secrecy and keeping it all
is better.
Locked up it's better for everyone, too. Yeah, they seriously believe that.
They convince themselves of that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up our conversation for the panel this morning. We always welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC goes on Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a hybrid online and in-person Master of Science in Engineering Management for working professionals. BIRE.org/engineering for upcoming programs in the region. Baypath College Graduate School, offering a Master of Science degree in Nonprofit Management and Philanthropy, on campus or online, baypath.edu for details. And Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable, and welcome back to our panel this morning. We're going to wrap up here. We've got a couple of issues to talk about, at least one anyway. We'll talk about something that is a fascinating story. Ray said this to me yesterday, and it comes from the
Los Angeles Times, and it's fascinating. It is we've all heard about the black boxes in planes. When there is a tragedy in planes, there's a black box that comes, and this tells you where the plane was, what it was doing, and it records what was being said in the cockpit and so forth. So now the solution, many believe, for what happens on our highways is a little black box that fits neatly by the dashboard of your car. The devices which track every mile a motorist drives and transmit that information to the government, look at this idea that, well, we'll get more information about our highway system and help us in planning, and our highway system is outdated, and this will help get more information. Great line in the article that says the usually dull arena of highway planning has suddenly spawned intense debate and colorful alliances.
What, you find that dull, highway planning? I find it fascinating.
Libertarians have joined environmental groups in lobbying to allow government to use the little boxes to keep track of the miles you drive and possibly where you drive them, then use the information to draw up a tax bill. The Tea Party is aghast. The American Civil Liberties Union is deeply concerned, too, raising a variety of privacy issues. But again, I still want to know, this has a possibility of telling you some very important information about the speed a car was going before something horrible happens. It seems to me like it has a lot of positive implications.
The word black box, that description is just wrong. When I first saw the story, I thought it was going to be like the black box in a plane.
Right.
What's the old joke, you know, that if the little black box can survive the crash, why don't they make the plane out of the same material? Yeah. So I thought that would be it, that it was going to collect information on what happened in the time of trouble.
Right.
This is a meter. This is like the gas meter on your house.
It is exactly.
It has nothing to do with black box, and it's collecting information so you can get better taxed. And I find this a really interesting juxtaposition with the story about intelligence gathering on Americans. If you want to figure out who's using roads and pay for it, put in tolls, put in like meters and baskets like they do in Virginia to pay for roads that you're building.
Well, we have an easy pass.
I do not want.
Well, and then many say
easy
that
pass makes me worry too.
Many people say that easy pass is just, you know, this is kind of the next
step. A way for the government to watch, yeah.
Well, and you know, if you get from exit 23 to 19 in this amount of time and not that amount of time, they can.
Well, the
has that happened, though?
The Florida paper, the Fort Lauderdale paper, won a Pulitzer Prize last year, like looking at their equivalent of easy pass records for police officers and finding how fast they were speeding on highways in non-crisis.
Oh, I see.
Won a Pulitzer Prize. This information,
but not for civilians.
You're not getting a letter in the mail saying you were speeding last Wednesday on the New York State Thruway
as you were heading to Newburgh.
But
you
could.
It was reporters who thought to you. The data that way, not law enforcement, but they could. I'm opposed to this. We have enough cuts on our liberties. I want to drive and have no one know where I'm going.
It's important. It's important to come up with a way.
That's why you were gone for
a way to pay for highways, and it seems logical and fair that the people who use them the most should pay the most.
Yep. And I do understand that gas doesn't work anymore.
Right.
That's interesting in the article.
Cars
are built; they go further on the same amount of gas, and everybody's afraid to raise taxes, so you can't collect with the gas tax. I get it. Collect tolls
on every road.
Pay on the roads that you're concerned about.
Central Avenue, Delaware Avenue,
but also
Route 9.
How many times? My understanding was, and here again, I guess this isn't a full. I don't fully get what the information that they're getting out of this or how it helps. But the those boxes that they have on the highway where the strip goes across
and
it meters and it tells you, you know, how many people have gone over that road, how many people have gone northbound, how many people have gone southbound. I mean, that's information that's all used for basically the same reason, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then what they're gathering here.
But if they put the little black boxes in, that's fine, because I'll find one of those places sure to crop up where they figure out how to bypass the box, how to turn it back, roll back.
Law. Yes.
I know. There'd be a whole budding little black industry out there.
Well, I mean, I think what they're talking about is that this is a mileage-based user fee. And it's a fair way to assess people for the amount of miles they drive. Now, why don't they just look at your odometer?
Who is going to do this? The federal government is going to do this?
Well, federal government or locality, state?
It's when you go into the hospital for Obamacare, they'll ask to see your mileage.
Well, they'll already know.
Like, when you take out a rental car.
Right.
You know,
there's a black box.
This is what they say. Here's your numbers going in. Here's your numbers going out.
Right.
All right. So
that's an odometer. They've had those for a long time.
Right.
Right. It seems like that's a fair way to do it.
So if you have an inspection that happens yearly mm-hmm. of your vehicle, this was your inspection. This was the number on June 1st of mm-hmm. 2012, mm-hmm. and here's your number on June 1st, 2013. It seems to me that would give you your information, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think what they're looking for
they're
is
also
to find out what
GPS.
Kinds of roads you're looking
this
at.
This is
you know,
about money.
You're
this
a hideware. It is
money.
About money.
They're, this is about
I know, but if they have the number.
Americans' right to travel.
But if you travel.
And privilege of being an American, of throwing 2 gallons of gas in your car and driving somewhere. Oh, my God, I don't have the money to pay the tax. Restriction of freedom. Overtaxation. Ridiculous.
You go.
1984.
What do you feel about paying for baggage
society.
On the,
you go,
on the
Ray.
Airplane trip?
All right. 2 minutes to go. I can hold that.
It seems like there's two directions that things are going. Most airlines now charge you to carry on, you know, to take a bag, you know, or
right.
charge you extra for the bag. They'll charge you for this, charge you for that, charge you for leg room. I mean, essentially, that was all, everybody paid for everybody. And if you went on with one newspaper tucked under your arm, you paid the same as the guy pulling two giant suitcases along that might weigh 50 pounds each. And now they're just trying to find a way to assign the cost to those who are revving up the cost.
Oh,
so,
you only left me 2 minutes to talk about airlines. Oh, my God.
So
no.
How was your flight from Rio de Janeiro?
It was horrible. It was horrible, and I hate the airlines and that whole system. You're wrong. I carry in a giant luggage to the plane now because they charge me to check it and because they lose it when they do, and they still charge you even if they lose it. And then they make you stand in a line that's separate from priority customers, even though we're both going through the same door into the same plane. Explain that to me. It's like some ridiculous kind of business model.
I just want to clarify.
Don't
it
get
wasn't
me going.
Necessary. Endorsing this.
This is your fault,
I thought
Mike.
You were,
Mike.
I was just saying that this black box on your car is another attempt to assign the cost to the people who use the most.
I do. I love the picture that Rosemary painted, though, because there is that going on to the priority on the left hand side of the stanchion.
Yeah.
There's the red carpet and it's out. And by the way, which even the people who can get on the plane don't use, because it's to the left of where the person is. Who's to the right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
so stupid. And then let's talk about the little curtain that divides economy class from first class.
We should have started
this. I want
this.
A revolution.
This should have started the show. It would have been a much more compelling hour.
It's sounding like a Seinfeld episode to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And suddenly, you know, I have this idea that Ray's going to be having some sort of black box tea party in like the
That's
Santa
right.
Barbara Bay.
Don't
these
tread
things.
On me, man.
Don't tread on my highway, man.
We'll be back tomorrow for another edition of the Roundtable panel. Yes. Well, good luck, Ray. Hopefully you'll make it. Thank you all very much for being with us. Mike,
thank
always
you.
A pleasure.
Thank
Rosemary,
you.
Wonderful having you back. Ray, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Coming up next on the program, we'll celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. We'll do so with some wonderful book picks. We welcome you to join us. It's all coming up next on the Roundtable.